Hello, my friends. It's time for the, what is this called? Playwright? Oh, man. Is there Sound of Play or, you know, movies?
Hello again and welcome to Sound of Play.
Right.
You have to keep this in the show now, H. You understand that, right?
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, it's time for Playwright. And as you can tell, we are very mentally prepared to be doing such a strenuous task as talking into a microphone with our friends for an hour upwards.
I got to tell you, I want to invite, if you will, paint this word picture for the listeners now, because the basement in which I record, it sounds like it's my mother's basement, but it's my own basement, which I think somehow makes it more legitimate.
It does have a mothery kind of sound to it.
Right. I have, I've run out and gotten a little TV that I've hooked up the Nintendo Switch to and the Super Analog NT. So I've got a little Nintendo factory down here, as well as all my Amiibo that I have set up on the shelf, which I shared back on Instagram a while back. But yeah, this place is really coming together. And gamers, if you can create your own gaming space, do so. I think it's very fun. It's healthy. I barely use it, but it's nice to have.
I don't really like the term man cave so much because it feels kind of pejorative and it assumes that only men are going to be into these types of things that typically populate that space. But I am all for creating a room of fun, a mystery dungeon of enjoyment, so to speak.
The enjoyment dungeon is a very different tone, isn't it?
Joviality dungeon.
Before we get into the pitches, you beat Dead Cells.
I did. Yes. Finally, I got that one good run that propelled me right to the end. It was very close. In the final boss fight, I was down to one HP at one point. And I think the thing that really pushed me over the edge is that I noticed in previous boss runs against the final boss, I died quite frequently because I could never, I never had enough time to fully drink my potion to heal myself.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to get really lucky to heal yourself in between attacks because that guy's pretty brutal.
Oh boy.
But I invested in a mutagen that only heals 30% health, but it does it pretty much instantly. And so it's kind of like a little blood flasks and Bloodborne. And so you can just shoot up quickly and get what you need to at least survive a couple more hits.
That's interesting. You would think that the 30% penalty is not worth it, but I guess...
Yeah, especially since you only have four charges, you're essentially sacrificing 70% of your healing potential.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Cool. Well, and you'll get there soon enough, I'm sure.
You know what? I'm hoping to get more achievements as well. I'm playing it on Xbox. Primarily, and I find myself not getting the amount of achievement points I would expect to get. Like, I feel like I've been really stretching myself and barely getting some gamer score out of this thing. So, Dead Cells developer, be less stingy with your gamer points.
I'm playing it on Switch, and so I'm getting nothing but the pure satisfaction of playing the game.
That's right. You're doing it for the love of it. So, that's great.
Right.
So you've been doing it on Switch. So. The sort of, because I have it on Switch too, and I have noticed it is a little framey at times. Is that like severe for you?
I play it docked, and so for me, it's not so bad. Although it might be one of those things where you just kind of don't see it after a while. I'm not going to say that like I'm immune to that type of thing, but I think that I'm a little bit less particular about framiness than a lot of people are.
Yeah. Good for you.
But yeah, playing it docked, I haven't really experienced any issues.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to reaching your point in the 12-step journey.
Have you beaten conjunctivitis yet?
Is that a real thing?
In the game, yeah.
No, I haven't beaten conjunctivitis. Oh no, I'm so much further than I thought I was.
That's a particularly nasty boss. It's not a necessary boss to beat on the progression, the general like progression that you would take. It's something that you have to go into a very specific route to face, but it's guarding an important rune that you'll want. But it's that's a real pain to fight. That one, I'm probably not going to go down that path again. But it's out there, and if you're looking to really, I guess, unlock some cool new areas, then that might be something you want to pursue.
Fair enough. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, trying to dance around spoilers there. Besides naming the bosses and telling you what happens at the end of the game.
Well, conjunctivitis is very good. So spoiler alert, there's a very good named boss in that game.
Yeah, there we go. Anyways, let's get to some video game pitches today. It is my turn to go first today. And what I have, well, I guess, you know what? This is becoming a pattern of undercutting my confidence by saying up front that's not a very good idea. Let's just let it speak for itself and see where it goes, because it's our job, even if it's not very good at the beginning, to fix it. So I'm not going to say that it's not a good idea, despite this whole diatribe that kind of implies it. Anyways, what I want to do is a very simple game. Players control, yeah, I don't know, little characters, little cubes or something. Something simple. I wanted to keep it kind of minimalist around a very simple map. Maybe it's just kind of shaped in interesting or funny ways. It's top-down overhead bird's eye view. Basically, you just hold a button to increase the radius of a circle around yourself, and you're stationary while the circle increases, and you release the circle to ensnare the other player and basically deal damage that way. And so if they are contained, they are eliminated or damage is done to them. And if they're only half contained, maybe it's less damage or something like that. But basically it's just a very simple risk reward of leaving yourself open to attacks while performing the attack. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes. Starting the clock.
Okay, well, I like this idea, Mr. No Confidence. I don't know what's going on this week, but I will tell you that what I think is interesting is, in my mind, this makes each player a little bit like, you know, those weird little black domes that have circular lasers from Mario Odyssey? There's like in different platforming parts of the game, particularly in the, I think, the Toaster Arena region. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of points where you're kind of encountering these little things, and as you hit them with your hat, they expand out into like a laser circle that obviously damage Mario. Like, mm-hmm. This is turning the players into that, kind of, right?
Yeah, kind of. Except it's not really the circle that hurts people on contact anyways. It's releasing the button. And so it's kind of like playing chicken with the other player. Maybe it's like maybe your circle as it expands has like a gradient of color. You know, the longer you hold the button down, the more damage it'll end up doing. This is inspired by a game that I saw at a, not a game jam, but like a Seattle area exposition of video games called the Seattle Indies Expo. It's really great. It was a few years back, but it's called Super Weights. It's a boxing game. It's a top-down boxing game where you have just like a really interesting rock, paper, scissors combination of throwing quick punches, which barely do any damage at all, but, you know, kind of chip away at the opponent's health. You can do a wind-up punch, which you can keep wound up indefinitely. It slows you down very, very severely, but it has a slightly longer reach than the normal punch. And so, you know, you have that kind of risk reward of you're leaving yourself open for an attack, but as the other opponent is approaching, you have the advantage on them. And so, you know, it's a nice way to balance the risk reward. And I always just really liked that interplay. That game is called Super Weights. Again, I don't remember if I mentioned that. Look it up. I don't think it's even finished yet. It's been a lot of years, but, you know, it's an interesting idea, and I just really love the way it's played, and it's really stuck with me all these years. And so I'm just kind of looking to kind of recreate that, but in with more variables. And I'm thinking, if this is a weirdly shaped map or something like that, then you have all these considerations of trying to corner your opponent or trying to force them into a move so that you can do something. But I'm not really sure, because it always feels like whoever presses the button first, would win because there's no good, like, quick measure you can do to interrupt them. It's not a risk reward because, you know, based on how far away you are, it's going to take the opponent as long as you've been pushing the button to interrupt you. And so I'm not quite sure of what the risk reward is just yet.
What if we add in some more variety to this? What if we say that there's NPC, like little creep bad guys all over the map too, that you can destroy and potentially power up your beam or speed it up, or maybe we even go a little Dead Cells in it and we give it the power to just penetrate walls. Maybe, or certain walls have like structural weaknesses or something. Maybe you have to even, like, as a battle commences, like the walls get weaker and weaker until like they're basically semi-permeable to the beams, but not quite to the people.
Well, let's give this circle physical properties, because I think that will open up some doors for us. Maybe instead of it being kind of an abstract shape that's expanding from our body, it's like a liquid. I want to make it look like the character is like peeing himself or whatever, but you know, it's like maybe kind of loosing oil on the ground, and it kind of spreads out in a liquid way and, you know, conforms to the shape of the walls around it. And as soon as you release the button, it ignites and everything in it goes up in flames. You are immune to your own color of flames. And so basically you're just looking to ignite the enemy. And, you know, maybe there could be instances where there are hills and so the oil could flow downhill. And so that way you can get a little bit quicker, quicker spread, but it's not necessarily as easy to aim or whatever. You know, I just want some of these balances in place.
Yeah, that's interesting. Of course, the types of circles you can have are solid, liquid, naked, punished, and old. Liquid is a good bet here, but I spent too much time on that joke. No, the point that I want to make here is I even love the idea of maybe the flames do hurt you too. It almost is like a little bit more of a physics-y Bomberman-esque type style where you can actually lay down some liquid. And as you chase your opponent, maybe you're chasing them towards one of your sort of set traps for them, or they don't want to go into a hallway with you on the other side and you could potentially like cut it off for them, or they'd have to take damage by walking through some of your flames, but so would you.
That's interesting. And that's, something I considered. The only problem that I have with it, and I'm very happy to address the issue and go with it if we can find a cool way around it. But, if you're very, very, very low on health, then basically you have no more options, because if you are the center point of, you know, where this liquid is coming from, then you have no choice but to hurt yourself. And so, you know, that feels a little iffy. You know, I want to give at least somebody a fighting chance, even if they're really, really low on health. The risk reward should be the longer that you hold the button down, the more damage it does. And the way that makes sense is that it gets weaker on the peripherals. And so if you can contain more of the area around the enemy and therefore draw the enemy closer to the center of the circle, then it should do more damage. But if a circle is spreading out around you, then you are always in the center of the circle. So you would always be doing more damage to yourself than the enemy.
Okay,
and so that's
fair.
The only, those are the only problems I have with that in particular.
I love the idea of some chance to the encounter, right? Like maybe there's a power up where like you can spread your circle like at 2x the speed, or you can spread it like slower, but at 2x the distance or something. And for the potential opponent to maybe have a power up where they have, you know, 2 seconds of shield, you know, just a very quick flash of a shield, it might be enough to get them to escape your grasps. Or maybe they've got the right power up that will counter the one that you have. And then you both find yourself like sending out these like oil slicks or whatever. Now it's almost like a Splatoon, right? Sending out these oil slicks and suddenly both of you needing to retreat from the situation because of what was going on.
Maybe there is a kind of a split second of, you know, it takes time for the flames to spread from the inside of the circle to the outside. And so the further somebody is on the peripheral of the circle, the longer it'll take the flames to get to them. And maybe they have like a very brief shield window, like you suggested. And so, you know, your incentive to contain them more fully within the circle is to remove that window, that viable window of escaping it.
If you kind of have that momentary delay, I love the idea of maybe having some way to accidentally, like, prematurely ignite or maybe not prematurely, but like sort of accidentally, like if the two oil slicks overlap, like your flames continue to spread over into the opponents.
I think we run into another thing of how do we communicate it visually when the circles do overlap as to like what is, I guess you just color it like a complementary color. And so, you know, that space is safe for nobody.
Yeah, like you get the sort of Venn diagram space.
Right.
The Venn diagram space could be also like, that's potentially the most deadly area, right? Like somehow, like the flames burn super bright or twice as bright there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Well, I mean, we're out of time. That's our 10 minutes. You know, I feel like there's a lot of places to go with this, but we've exhausted the time that we've allotted to it, unfortunately. But let's come up with a name. I'm going to call this one a burning ring of fire. I feel that's appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good to me.
It'll be great to secure the license to the theme song as well.
That's great.
I'm sure that'll be very, very easy to do, right?
I've foretold the same thing.
I think after Guitar Hero 5, the Johnny Cash estate is going to be a little bit more scrupulous with making sure they vet the games that they're lending their likeness to. Anyways, let's move on. Q, what are you bringing us today?
So what I'm bringing you today is something unusual. I was thinking about games that I love from my past, and one of the ones that, well, I can't necessarily say would hold up today as a great game, but it has a near and dear spot in my, and I think many other people's hearts, is a game, Enslaved Odyssey to the West.
Right,
do you know this
right.
game?
Yeah, by Ninja Theory, right?
Yes, I brought it up before.
Wait, is it Ninja Theory, or are they the ones that do Dead or Alive? I can never remember.
I think it's, it's whoever does I Am Setsuna. Let's call it Ninja Theory for now, unless you Google.
Yes, it is Ninja Theory. I just Googled it.
Okay, perfect.
It's Team Ninja that does Dead or Alive, right? Okay, we're good.
Okay, thank God. So have you played this game?
Yeah, and Enslaved Extreme Beach Volleyball as well.
Okay, I love the monkey physics in that one.
Right.
So at the end of that game, I'm going to spoil it
just
for
say
people.
It's based on Journey to the West. It's a, I guess what you would refer to now as like a PlayStation action game. You know, that type of game that it, like, you know it when you see it.
Yeah, some combination of like almost Arkham style combat with something akin to an Uncharted-esque series of platforming and climbing things. That game ends on this very interesting cliffhanger of discovering that all the people that have been sort of like captured or thought killed in this post-apocalypse wasteland are actually in something called the pyramid, and the game ends with you kind of destroying the pyramid that is keeping all these people in a matrix-like state, unplugging them unwittingly, if you will, and making that decision, and the game just kind of ends. And that kind of, I think, left me and the people that love that game with a sense of yearning for what you could do next. And so here's my pitch. I know this is very long of a pitch, but hey, we don't count the time to the pitch. Enslaved Odyssey, the West sequel. Humans have been freed. They're split now in factions. The people who had great lives and status and privilege in this Matrix-like reality are really bitter about it. They want to return to it. So they've started setting up sort of mini fortresses with pyramids all over the wasteland. And there are people who are living in them, and they're using them to sort of power, use their brain power, an extra brain wave, whatever the, you know, scientific mumbo jumbo is, to remote control enemies and drones and all these new kinds of crazy robots throughout the land. So you get something that's like a mix between Shadow of Mordor in terms of storming these fortresses with a little bit of Horizon Zero Dawn in terms of the sort of robot combat that you have access to. You play the game as Trip, the woman who destroyed the pyramid in the first place, and she's all alone. We don't know where Monkey is, and like maybe halfway through the game you find him, or he's been captured and you free him, and then you're reunited, and then you get that sort of Arkham 2 Batman Catwoman combat combo where you can like switch between characters, very dynamic. But adding in all those modern gameplay mechanics, the great upgrade systems of things like Horizon and all in the latest God of War, all that kind of fun stuff, I think we could do cool, weird things with it. So I know it's kind of specific, but let's see if we can make it a little weird.
All right, starting the clock there. So I'm curious, this ruling class is kind of going into this, wants to return to the Matrix, so to speak, the rich, the successful. What is it like a virtual reality type thing, or, you know, are they completely incapacitated? Because, you know, if they are essentially going into VR and then remote controlling drones to fight you on the outside, then once you actually reach them, is that a bit of an anti-climax? Like, you'd expect a boss at the end of a level, whereas instead you would just find a bunch of like old rich white dudes, like all plugged into machines, and you can just go in there and lay waste. Or maybe that's kind of fun. Maybe they're like loot pinatas at the end of it. It's really kind of taking out your frustrations on the rich.
Yeah, that's interesting. Loot pinatas too. Well, if you started doing things like breaking down some of these robot things or what you use to upgrade your abilities, potentially, yeah, inside these mini pyramids, there is the most valuable resources. And I think like the closer you get to the interior and the more it ramps up, then the combat gets like more and more difficult. It could be a really satisfying punctuation to have the last moments be quiet by comparison.
Yeah, that's interesting. If, you know, literally the most powerful people in the world are kind of, in essence, the like the little scrubby zombies in Dark Souls, the ones that don't even put up a fight, the ones that you just like fight in the tutorial just to pick up a few extra souls here and there.
Just dumb little meat bags that you can have your way with. So I was also thinking about how to handle, you play this game, so you know that like Monkey, there's such stupid names, Trip and Monkey, but I know Monkey is tied more to the lore of the whole thing. So,
well, because it's based on Journey to the West, the kind of traditional Chinese tale.
Yeah. So he is more the antagonist, he's everything in that first game. And I think that doesn't give Trip a lot to do other than kind of be a victim. So I would love to see ways to disempower Monkey, or maybe Monkey in this reality is he's aged, he's not quite as capable, and you're doing a little bit more caring for him, almost a Last of Us style role reversal.
Wouldn't the same thing happen to Trip though, unless it's like a Metal Gear Solid 4 type of scenario?
Yeah, I'm thinking that
she nerds, has, like, this is our reference points.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking that in this new land, she may have cybernetically enhanced herself. She has been always a little bit more crafty, where he was kind of the more basic person that would not adapt or survive as well in a human machine hybrid sort of scenario. So I like the idea of her, you know, helping him just as much.
Yeah. So let's also talk about unique mechanics. You know, I don't want it to just be like
this game, that game.
Yeah. You know, so let's introduce, like, what are some, I've only played a little bit of Enslaved. I never played it all the way through. I've always meant to. I just, you know, never really got around to it. I've played the first couple of chapters probably. But is there anything in that that we can expand upon that we can make more interesting in a sequel? Something that hasn't been done before?
Well, one of the key things in that game is Monkey and his cloud. So if you remember, or if I don't know how soon into the game it's introduced, but he has kind of the ability to ride around on this very fast moving vehicle, and it can't do too much more in the original game other than sort of go and speed boost. It's almost like one of those Destiny vehicles or something. So I love the idea of introducing, maybe other people have this technology now, or it's been reverse engineered, and having really elaborate chase scenes and sequences where you're trying to do vehicular combat, because it's just your body sitting on a disc, right? So you have technically full free range of motion. Maybe you can change its size or its shape, and like it can become a mobile battlefield in and of itself.
Okay. And then I guess what would be the scale on which these battles are fought?
I like the idea of an open-ish world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it could be something reasonable where you'd probably want to traverse it with the vehicle, but maybe it's smaller than that. Maybe it's more tightly compact. I know the Mordor games give you a lot of movement mechanics and the ability to sort of take over creatures. I think that could be interesting as well.
Hmm. So taking over creatures.
Yeah, maybe she's since Trip deals with technology, and she has her little the premise of the game is she's sort of attached monkey headband that ties their life together. And it could be interesting for that to somehow come into play as well.
Especially if Monkey has gotten older and is not doing so well himself.
Yeah, right. She now has to give it to him in order to keep him alive. And maybe maybe in different parts of the game, right, would before you're introduced to him or he comes around, or maybe it's only specific sequences that you need to keep him protected like that. You could tie your life to a machine and sort of hack it, right? Like take it over. Maybe even a fun like Nier Automata minigame style, where then you are in control of this crazy robot, and you get that kind of God of War riding a giant troll feeling for a moment.
I feel like on a literary level, we're kind of inviting a comparison between the main character who is taking over one of these robots that is, in essence, already controlled by one of the rich elite who's trying to escape the world. And so, you know, I think like on a narrative level, it makes sense if you're going to perform the same actions as the villains, you should be leaving yourself open to the same criticisms or the same vulnerabilities. So if there's room to explore, like, what does this kind of synchronicity in the in these character actions mean?
Yeah, I like the, like, if Trip just goes almost totally limp, like that VR picture on the Time magazine cover, whatever. She's just kind of suspended as the energy is like pouring out of her body or whatever. That could be interesting, you know. And then you give yourself, you know, the classic thing we always talk about and in game design, the risk reward of
leaving yourself vulnerable. Yeah.
Leaving yourself vulnerable while you're doing these things, because, you know, in Mordor and God of War, you physically possess the character and you're essentially invincible that entire time. So to leave yourself open could be really interesting.
Maybe that's the only way to heal health, is to sap like some of the battery power from the enemies essentially. And you can possess enemies at any time, but while you possess them, your real body is essentially completely exposed and can be pretty easily dealt with. And so if you are low on health, the only way to heal yourself is to possess an enemy, like drain their battery and then return to yourself. And then that will heal yourself.
Yeah, that'd be interesting too, if you have some sort of energy charged weapon or something like that, where you would actually need to like regain or recover its energy in order to use your combos or your special abilities.
Or even the sharpness system in a Monster Hunter game. You know, it's not quite as black and white as like a health meter or a stamina meter, like in Dark Souls. You know, it is, you know, you can still swing your sword when it's not sharp anymore, but it takes a little bit of time to sharpen it up and you'll be doing so much more damage and you'll, you know, it's really not even worth going at it if you're coming in with a, like a rusty, broken sword.
Yeah, and you know what? What's cool about that is the, if you include a monster hunter, like, if you don't take over an enemy and sap battery that way, like, because you don't want to leave that necessarily as the only option. Maybe you do, mm-hmm. but you could also, like, very slowly have that, like, monster hunter right. sharpening / charging animation. You have to, like, deploy a solar panel or something, right, to soak up some sun, and that takes a while, and you're either without your weapon at that time or you're stuck in an animation where you're super vulnerable.
Should use the No More Heroes charging animation. Did you ever play that?
No, I never played
Suda that. Suda51s. Yeah, it... To charge up his beam katana, which would run out of steam every once in a while, you have to make a very suggestive motion with the Wiimote, which I appreciate.
Yeah, okay, so then that's definitely that's definitely how you charge it. Perfect.
On that note, we're out of time.
Oh,
right. Just leaving it off on exactly where you wanted to take it.
That's right. So, you brought me right up to the edge with that pitch.
That's right. That's what we call edging in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. If anyone ever asks you what Playwright is about, you can tell them edging for sure. For sure.
We're the edge lords. Q, what do you want to call this one?
We should probably have enslaved in it, right? Maybe it's enslaved Odyssey.
Don't say to the east.
No. I mean, maybe Odyssey's even bad, but like enslaved, born free or something. I think it's kind of interesting to talk about the new people who have never been captive to that Matrix-like reality.
Yeah, and that's a nice counterpoint to the enslaved part of the title.
Yeah, it may be something like that. Born free sounds a little bit like a Die Hard sequel, so I don't
I was
love
just
that.
The same thing.
Yeah, could you help me with this? I don't know what to enslaved.
I think it's a kind of a poetic title. Maybe like Freedom Born or something. I don't know, just to kind of like hide the diehardiness of it. But
yeah, Freedom Born. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
All
and
right.
Your whole thing is you're trying to like make sure that the next generation is like entirely Freedom Born.
Anyways, let's move now to our community. This comes from, it seems like a very serious message coming from one of our dear, sincere listeners, Mimi Nicholas Dinha, who says, "My dear friend, am Mrs. Mimi Nicholas Dinha. I work in one of the prime bank here in Burkina Faso. I want the bank to transfer the money left by most of the greedy African politicians used our bank to launder money overseas through the help of their political advisors. Most of the funds which they transferred out of the shores of Africa were gold and oil money that was supposed to have been used to develop the continent. I can you investment this money and also help the poor? The amount value at $6.5 million 6,500,000 US United States American dollars left in his account still unclaimed. More details we'll be giving to you if you are interested. Thanks with my best regards, Mrs. Mimi Nicholas Dinha, Telex Manager, United Bank for Africa, UBA, Burkina Faso." Wow. You know, when we see something this that really gets to the heart of modern issues, especially dealing with such complicated topics as international economics and politics across borders, it really speaks to us, and we have to address it. It ended up in our email box for a reason. So let's make this into a video game. Let's start the clock.
I mean, it's spot on, isn't it? This
it's really evocative.
Yeah, exactly. We have Africa. We have developing a continent. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back to, I'm going to, you know, talk about the thing that I want to talk about, which is this could be a great African Stardew Valley where you start off with $6.5 million just to start to build out a humble continent.
Yeah. You know, I like the point in the email that says that it was supposed to have been used to develop the continent and not to develop the economies of the countries within the continent, but develop the continent itself. So what if you have to, you know, as your population is expanding, you have to literally make the continent out of floating money in the ocean?
Okay.
So the ground is money, essentially.
The ground, well, yeah, every corporation could have already told us this, right? Okay, the ground is money.
One of the interesting things about this, and just like pure coincidence, is that you know, the person that I was dating before I was with my my current partner was from Burkina Faso and told me a lot about that country and a lot about the kind of culture there. And that was as much of Africa was a colony of one of the European nations back in the dark ages that we no longer speak about. But it was a French colony. And so I was very curious. And of course, just one person's narrative can't speak for the entire country's opinion. But I was curious. I always asked her, like, did you grow to resent the French over time? Because, you know, they were, I mean, this was long, long before she was alive. But, you know, there's still sometimes that cultural distrust of people that had taken advantage of the nation previously. See a lot of Indians' opinions of the English, for example.
Mm.
So I was always curious, like, do you have a cultural distrust of the French? And she always said, like, no, like, actually, we really like the French. And when they come into the country, they're still kind of, you know, treated like royalty. And I'm not quite sure if that's like a good thing or a bad thing, but it's interesting.
Up.
Well, I mean, it could be like we've adopted this culture so much that the actual French are kind of our only link back to a culture that we kind of feel like we are a part of. Like, that's an interesting dynamic. I'm not like,
yeah,
obviously it's all like cultural imperialism and it's, you know, stems from really bad places, but it, like, it's an interesting anthropological study, so to speak. And so I guess a roundabout way of getting to it, like, it would be interesting to incorporate some of the history of Africa and to really get into the multitude of people and cultures and religions that exist there in whatever kind of simulation we're trying to build.
It looks here, based on what I'm seeing, it became Burkina Faso around 1984. Is that right?
Could be. I don't know that much about the history of the country, but I know that a lot of African nations come in and out of being recognized. And, you know, sometimes very similar groups of people will kind of identify or will pop up as a new nation. And so that the borders in Africa are being redrawn more frequently than they are in other parts of the world.
I think it's interesting to, I've never played a game outside of maybe Civ. And I'm sure, like, mm-hmm. I don't go deep enough in the strategy game sphere to have a clear analogy for this. So if anybody else is a huge strategy game nerd, please, and by nerd I mean fan, please write in or comment so that I can get additional context on this. But what's interesting to me is that I've never played a game before where you're kind of fresh out of occupation, right? And you're trying to build up your culture. So much I think about what building up your own culture ends up being, and I could be wrong on this, but, you know, my best guess is a lot about what values you hold up and what you sort of curate for your own people. So I wonder if there's something to this country development game, which is about somehow giving grants or allowing your people to explore different art forms, that sort of thing.
That's interesting. You know, I always really liked in Civilization, you have this idea of a cultural victory, which again gets back to ideas of cultural imperialism, and that's not necessarily something that should be celebrated, but it is a way of quote unquote taking over the world, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, this is interesting in a post-colonial type of environment where maybe there are power vacuums. You see remnants of the culture that had previously or that had just pulled out of the country. And you're trying as a, you know, native born in the country, trying to kind of reinvoke a sense of national pride, of self-identity again, maybe getting away from the country that had previously been occupying, or maybe embracing that because now everyone in the country identifies as that nationality or that cultural background. They've grown up watching their TV and listening to their music. And so for all intents and purposes, they are French. Yeah. And so maybe you either take back the country and make it our own again, or you know, let's play to the populace, you know, let's play to what they want to hear. And right now they want to hear French.
And I love the idea, because like so much of like civilization games or games where you're going through the motions of harvesting basic resources, this takes me all the way back to old PC games like Caesar and Cleopatra. But I love the idea of importing goods or creating subsidies that end up like you get more of a micro result from those things. Like you're making these macro decisions, but then like the micro that you're getting back from your populace is, hey, a new dish is starting to become popular, right? And it's a particular type of food, or it's a new music style has started to emerge with your people because of maybe, you know, an instrument that has suddenly become popular thanks to a natural resource or something. You get to like see and experience these things, and you have those nice like Final Fantasy CG renders of like what the food looks like and all that stuff, and maybe that can be generative in some way, right? So it can be a little, you can get a little silly and you can get a little wacky, but like you end up coming away from a playthrough of the game with this nice little dossier as to like the civilization that you created, and like music samples and, you know, foods and, you know, fictional dishes with silly recipes and stuff.
That's interesting. You know, one of the things that I find really interesting, I realize as just some white guy, I'm not like the right person to be talking about this, but there's this idea of cultural appropriation that if, you know, if I were to start painting like traditional Native American art or something, it would be inauthentic because I haven't lived the part of the shared cultural heritage that leads to the art emerging in the first place. But I'm always interested in when there are a few generations that go by between, you know, the masters of these art forms, is that also a kind of a firm enough separation from the culture that originally produced it to warrant a kind of appropriative status? I might be kind of talking around the point, but do the people in the country now, if you were to say, let's go back to making the type of art that our great grandparents made, because that is what was the heart of our country, are you now just copying something you've seen in a museum just like anyone else in the world would be because you haven't lived that experience? Or is there really something about kind of the genetic memory of the people that makes that actually authentic and as authentic as it can be in the context?
Right. Like, is this actually in you, or is it something that appreciating from afar and want to be your own? That's a good question. And I think giving people that range of expression, giving people the ability to keep their society very traditionalist or very similar the whole time, but kind of develop it and see where that traditional path takes you. That sounds kind of uninteresting, right? But beyond that, like the ability to go and maybe you're going to keep it traditionalist and there's an aspect of happiness, or there's an aspect of some, you know, not simplicity, but there's an aspect of puritanical tendencies that yield just as interesting of a result.
Anyways, that's our 10 minutes. That turned out to be a lot more interesting than I was expecting it to be. Thank you to the very sincere Mrs. Mimi Nicholas-Dinah, who wrote in specifically to playwrightcast@gmail.com to tell us about this this very pressing issue that's going on in the banks of Burkina Faso. I guess we'll see. Just whatever ends up in our inbox, we can turn into video game gold.
Now, I see here, H, that you've somehow created some sort of filter here that you've named after a canned meat. It looks like that's just going to delete these amazing pitches after 30 days automatically. That's too bad.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I think, you know, I think of it like, you know, Spam is such a tasty treat that these are where the real delicious ones go.
Ah, okay. So these are the most delicious pitches. Because I don't even check this folder. So thank you for like bringing
opening
this to
the
my
email.
Attention.
Gmail even gave us this big red unavoidable header that says this message seems dangerous. And as an artist, there's nothing more exciting than a message that seems dangerous. So
yeah,
way to go, Google. You've really incited some passion here.
Yeah, incredible. Thank you.
Anyways, if you would like to write in to Playwright, either genuinely or otherwise, then you can do so at playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, to go straight to the pitching portal, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast on Twitter.
And while you're there, make sure to listen to Hello World. It's our theme song from Protodome off the album Blue Noise. And when you're over at his Bandcamp, he's got plenty of other tracks as well.
What I'm going to close out with today is a miniature pitch. And what I want to do is a dinosaur beauty parlor.
Ooh, I love it.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.